There is certain irony to saying that Donald Trump is bad for democracy when it looks pretty obvious that the Democratic Party leapfrogged the entire democratic system, and they did it in about 24 hours publicly.
Democrats are ready to move when the situation warrants it. Look, it doesn't matter convictions. It doesn't matter failed policies. Republican Party stuck with Donald Trump. He's yours. You got him. Welcome to it.
You can have him. Of course, the irony is Fox News is concerned about democracy. What?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Well, maybe it is.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF, amongst other fine terrestrial affiliates. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast, or as the cool meme kids call us, the Bratcast, Desi Doyen.
I don't know if we're that cool. But
well,
yeah.
Yes, we are. Anyway, thank you, Desi Doyen. Good to see you here. We have got two old friends standing by to join us momentarily to help us make sense of yet another astonishing week in American political history. Though I admit I'm running out of adjectives at this point to describe such weeks because they seem to happen pretty much every week at this point.
True.
Of late. But in the few short days following President Biden's decision on Sunday to drop out of the 2024 presidential race and endorse his vice president, Kamala Harris, for the top of the Democratic ticket, and all of the endorsements from elected Democrats and the small dollar donations and campaign volunteer signups, record donations, record signups that have come flooding in since then. There is clearly elation on the Democratic side of the aisle this week in a way that, frankly, I have not seen Democrats come together for since at least the nomination of Barack Obama for president, if even then. We will discuss all of that in a moment with my guests, but beyond the elation and the apparent unity among Democrats, I suspect many have been waiting to see how Harris's ascendancy to become the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee will be reflected in actual polling of actual American voters. And we are beginning to see some of that today. So take all of this with the usual caveats around presidential polling. It's just a snapshot of this moment in time. And there are margins of error that can be both huge and small, et cetera. But since much of Biden's decision to drop out was reportedly based on polling that was said to have suggested he would have a very difficult time beating Donald Trump, I suspect many have been waiting to see how Harris might do against Donald Trump in polling after it had become clear that Biden would not be the Democratic nominee. So to that end, according to Reuters last night, Vice President Kamala Harris opened up a marginal 2 percentage point lead over Republican Donald Trump in the first polling based on respondents' surveys taken only after President Biden ended his reelection campaign and passed the torch to Harris. That, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll, that compares with a marginal 2-point deficit that Joe Biden faced against Trump in last week's polling before his Sunday exit from the race. So a small lead for Harris, but essentially a 4-point swing from last week to this week for the Democratic ticket, at least in this one poll. The new poll conducted on Monday and Tuesday followed both the Republican National Convention, where Trump on Thursday formally accepted the nomination, and Biden's announcement on Sunday that he was leaving the race and endorsing Harris. Harris leads Trump in this poll right now at this moment, 44% to 42% in the national poll. That's a difference within the survey's 3-point margin of error. Harris and Trump were tied last week at 44%, that in a July 15 and 16 poll, so just over a week ago. And Trump led by 1 percentage point at the beginning of July, about 3 weeks ago. So clearly some movement toward the Democrats over that period, even if it is within the same margin of error. And Newsweek notes in regards to that same poll that former President Donald Trump is now losing a Reuters Ipsos poll for the first time since May as Vice President Kamala Harris gains ground. When independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was included in the poll, this new poll, Harris's lead over Donald Trump grew from 2 points to 4 points. With Kennedy in the race, with 42% of respondents backing her compared to 38% for Trump and 8% for Kennedy. Again, this poll was conducted on July 21 and 22 after Biden announced he's stepping out of the race among 1,241 U.S. adults. Trump has not trailed in a Reuters poll in nearly 2 months until this week. Also, in this poll, some 80% of Democratic voters said that they viewed Biden favorably. That compared to 91% who said the same of Harris. Three-quarters of Democratic voters said they agreed with that with a statement that the party and the voters should now get behind Harris, with only 1/4 saying multiple candidates should compete for the party's nomination. A pollster with Trump's campaign, of course, raced out to downplay any polling showing an increase in Harris's support, arguing that she was likely to see a temporary rise in popularity because of widespread media coverage of her new candidacy, which is, fact check, mostly true. But whether that is a temporary rise or a permanent one, of course, that remains to be seen. I think this can be likened to the bump in polling that almost all candidates get following the, for example, the naming of a vice president and after their national convention, etc. Though in this case, Kamala Harris may still get such a bump, a couple of bumps, when she does name her own vice president and from the upcoming Democratic National Convention next month in Chicago. Elsewhere, a YouGov Yahoo News poll released on Tuesday also showed Harris gaining support, though that poll was conducted from July 19 to July 22. That found Harris and Trump to be tied, each getting about 46%. Notably, about half of that poll, however, was conducted before Biden ended his campaign. But a YouGov Yahoo News poll from the end of June found Trump leading Harris by 2 points. So again, though arguably within the margin of error, Harris does appear to be gaining ground against Donald Trump. I will note before welcoming my guest that I have never seen Democrats so giddy and so unified around a nominee, including, by the way, Barack Obama back in 2008 after a bruising primary battle with Hillary Clinton, leaving many Democrats furious that Obama was somehow seen as, you know, the big-footing, the woman who many thought would be the first female president of the United States. Though it is all very, very early in this process, and there will almost certainly be many landmines along the way to November. That said, on the other hand, it did occur to me last night, Desiree.
Yep.
Listen, if we believe that Donald Trump, what he has been arguing for the past several years now, that Kamala Harris, in fact, is pretty much 100% assured to win this election. I know you're looking at me funny, but...
Yeah, I don't remember him saying that.
Well, he has been insisting for several years now that vice presidents, while overseeing the electoral count on January 6th, are allowed to choose any electoral slates, that she feels like counting. And she can ignore whichever electoral slate she wants.
Okay.
So, you know, congrats, Madam President. Joining us now for some, no doubt, much more high-minded insight and analysis, perhaps, our two old and very smart old-school blogger friends. First up, naturally, it's broadcast fan fave and award-winning Salon columnist Heather Digby Parton of Digby's Hullabaloo. Oh, welcome back, Heather. Are you sick of me calling you yet, by any chance?
Absolutely not. I love it, especially this week. Okay. Thank you so much for calling me.
Yes. And by the way, too bad if you are sick of it, because our listeners keep demanding it. Other than that, no pressure.
I demand it right back.
There
so
you
thanks.
Go. All right, we'll take it. And I am also delighted to welcome back to our show, after far too long away, our old friend John Amato, the mastermind behind the notorious Crooks and Liars blog, which some years back, Time Magazine once described as one of the best blogs in the nation. Oh, Mr. Amato, it has been far too long, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thanks for having me, you brat.
There you go. Thanks for noticing. Now,
I guess, anyway, I'm psyched to be here.
Good to have you here.
Yes, it's a good week for a nice little discussion.
Well, let's see if I can ruin that for everybody. Before we get on to what I really want to talk to you about, of course, regarding Kamala Harris and the effect that her presumptive nomination is now having on the Democratic Party, on the Republican Party, the media, on the race as a whole, I do want to take a moment to focus on Joe Biden, who, you know, either too late or just in time made all of this possible with the clearly gut-wrenching decision that he made on Sunday to drop out of the race. Heather, as you wrote at Salon this week, quote, July 21, 2024 was one of those "where were you when you heard" days that people will remember for a long time to come. Talk to me about your thoughts on what Joe Biden has done here and what this will mean to his legacy of what, you know, I have said many times was both the most effective and progressive presidencies, certainly in our lifetimes and arguably much longer than that.
Well, I will say, and this actually has a broadcast aspect to it, is that in that same piece, I said that, you know, I was online at the time and I saw it come over my feed, but a friend texted me immediately and said, "You were right. It won't happen until it happens." And that person happens to be Desi Doyen.
Oh, I think
who texted
I know her.
That to okay. me.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I think you've met her before.
Yeah.
It was her.
Yeah.
And so I didn't name her. I just said a friend didn't know if you wanted to be named.
That's
but
all
I'll
right.
do it
you
on your show. I will definitely say that. So yes, you know, it was one of those moments, which was, I mean, it was a shock. I mean, it was not that we didn't, you know, expect it might be coming, but when it finally did, it was one of those things where you just kind of you feel this sense of on the one hand, sadness for Joe Biden that he had to make that personal decision personally, just as a human being. Mm-hmm. You had to imagine that it was very, very difficult. These guys at that level of politics or any kind of competition, they don't want to quit and they don't want to give up. And there was no way that he wanted to do it. But the fact is he did it, and the sense of relief that I felt go through me was intense. And so looking back, leading over that, 3 week period since the debate, where we were all suddenly very much aware that this election was in grave danger, and that suddenly it looked like Donald Trump was probably or very likely to, you know, sail to some kind of victory. And the horror at that. Mm-hmm. And going through the whole drama of, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? And George Clooney and Ezra Klein and, you know, I mean, everything that was happening. Mm-hmm. And I was on a show with you guys and we were all just kind of, you know, oh my God. So in a way, I'm looking back on it and going, maybe that actually served something, because what it did was really bring home the stakes of the election. People started paying attention. We watched the, you know, the horror of the near shooting assassination mm-hmm. attempt of Donald Trump, and then the reaction to that at that absolutely stultifying Republican National Convention and his incredibly horrible speech. And we're going, is it going to happen? What's going to happen? What happens then? Joe Biden comes in on the Sunday after that convention that they thought they had it in the bag. He dropped this down, and the Democratic base, and I think quite a few independents too, that sense of relief, and then followed by the elation at the idea that we were maybe going to actually behave like professionals and adults and, you know, not political freaks, that we were get behind Kamala Harris. And, I couldn't actually be more shocked, but also a little bit proud of the Democratic Party today.
Well,
we
will see if that holds together and for how long. But so far, you're right. So far, so good. They are holding together. And I should note, Heather, you had been rallying, as you said, on this program and elsewhere for Biden, that if he was going to drop out, to do it on the night of Trump's RNC speech. Are you happy that he didn't do that, but that he waited until Sunday?
I am, actually. I think it was better that way. Let them have their moment, you know, because that speech was so bad that I think it was really worth the country watching it and being reminded of just what a complete, you know, imbecile he actually is. And, you know, we thought that the people with the you know, the panty liners on their ears running around, I mean, it was just the country needed to see this, I think, to actually be reminded of it. And to then have Joe come in on Sunday, just 2 days later, and just change the entire thing and do it with an incredible amount of graciousness and generosity. And, you know, the way that he's been with Kamala, you know, I mean, I actually got a little tear in my eye when he said, you know, I'm watching you, kid. I love you. You know, over the phone the other day, it was like, oh, you know, John, it's a beautiful thing to do, right? I mean, it's nice.
John
Amato. It's human. It's real.
John Amato. Many folks, obviously, Heather, certainly, were relieved when Biden dropped out on July 21. What are the argument that he waited far too long to do so, that he should have done so a year ago so the Democrats could have had a proper primary vetting process for their next presidential nominee? You heard Fox News at the top of the show downright furious about Democrats sidestepping democracy somehow. What of that argument?
Right. Well, it's hysterical because, like, we're listening to Donald Trump Jr. trying to lecture us on how we're supposed to pick our nominee, right? And it said Gorka and Fox News, and it's crazy. I mean, 81 million people voted for the Biden-Harris ticket, which means she got 80 million or 81 million votes herself. But, you know, so the idea that like somehow this is like, I think it was Tom Cotton was calling it a coup.
Yes.
And it's like, what are you talking about? A coup? Like, and thankfully Berman from CNN said, well, you know, you didn't call January 6th a coup, and they killed people and they defecated and they mm-hmm. destroyed and they attacked the Capitol. How could you call this a coup when she was the vice president and everyone is behind her? And then he just changed the subject, you know. But as far as Biden goes, I mean, I've been watching a lot of his speeches throughout, and the whole meme that he was somehow, you know, mentally defective and the stupid mental test and the acuity. I mean, it was Fox had been running that in Trump, you know, since 2019, and it wasn't effective. And then when Biden came out in the State of the Union and it was really forceful, it freaked them out and freaked Fox News out. And so then the whole thing, oh, well, Joe's on drugs, right? Then you got Ronnie Jackson, the most like embarrassing former White House physician in mm-hmm. history, mm-hmm. Going on and talking about him taking drug tests. Meanwhile, you know, Ronnie Jackson needs to take drug tests, you know.
Well, he ran a pill mill at the White House.
He
so
did.
We do
exactly.
know that. That's a fact.
John, let me press you on this, though. You know, do you think you would have supported Kamala Harris or thought her to be the best candidate for the job had there been a real, you know, normal year-long primary process? And even if not, does that actually matter given the real-world situation that voters are now in just over 100 days out from election?
It turned into such like a great situation. I can't tell you who I would have supported at that time because I never considered it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, the fact that I think Joe, and by the way, I think I might have been the first person to texted Heather as soon as he said one word at the debate, and I said, "Oh my God, he's sick. What's he doing on stage?" And I immediately was crushed. It's like I was really mad at his team. How could they let a guy go on who's definitely not sick? And who's definitely sick, rather. And I mean, his voice, even, you know, right. I won't get into mic EQs, but I was really angry about his team. And they could have said, listen, before they started the debate, you know, he's not under the weather, but we're still going to do it. Right.
Yeah.
But instead, they left him out and hung him out to dry. So I was really angry about that.
Yeah. And that was a history changing decision to do so.
Well,
and here we are.
And as it turns out, maybe it was a good decision ultimately. Heather Axios has a piece out today arguing that essentially any and all opposition to Harris was immediately shut down by Democratic insiders and elected elites, etc. What's your response to the argument that, you know, Harris was not picked by the voters? She was picked by delegates and donors and the elite and the Democratic establishment, et cetera.
Absolute nonsense. That is not what happened. And, you know, we were all, you know, involved in to the extent that we were involved in media and watching this. Yes, there were plenty of people who were pushing for Harris. I was one of them from the day after the debate when I wrote, you know, if President Biden, you know, I was honest about the fact that the debate had been pretty disastrous. And I said, look, if he decides that he can't go on, it has to be Kamala Harris because, you know, we don't have time. We don't have the luxury of doing anything other than to just fall in line behind the person who was, as John pointed out, voted in by 81 million people in 2020. She was on the ballot. You know, we all knew she was going to be the vice president during the primaries this year, which 14 million people voted for Biden. So it was not, to me, didn't seem undemocratic in the least. And we are, you know, running out of time here. So it was the only thing that made sense. And I didn't get any sense that, yes, there were people who were pushing Joe Biden to drop out. We know that. There were people in the media. There were people in the Democratic Party who were doing it. There were people who were defending him and were going out. I mean, we were talking about it for weeks, you know, what should happen here. So everyone knew that the decision was in his hands. And by the way, he said in the first interview that he gave to George Stephanopoulos, which was not very well received. I mean, it was okay, but everyone was going, yeah, I don't know. You know, it still seems a little off to me. But he said there, he goes, they said, what would you, you know, what would make you quit? He said, if I thought I couldn't win. Mm. That's exactly what happened when they came in, according to all the reporting, that over the weekend they came to him with these polls that showed that they were slipping badly in states that they shouldn't be slipping in, you know, things that states they thought they could count on.
Right.
And that was what finally, you know, persuaded him that he had to step down. And he knew very well that he had to pass the torch immediately to Kamala Harris to calm the chaos, because the chaos is what we did not need. We needed to have it as smooth as possible. And then the people, look at all the money that was raised in the first 24 hours with a bunch of new donors and this enthusiasm and excitement.
Yeah, from small, I mean, we should note, from grassroots donors, you know, to Act Blue, small dollar donors to the campaign itself. This is not like a bunch of tech bros coming in and dumping $40-50 million at a pop. This is actually the people. This is actually the voters. John,
it was obvious. Yeah.
John, the argument has been put forward again by some Republicans that if Biden is not healthy enough to run, then he's not healthy enough to serve as president and he should resign immediately. Your response to that?
I mean, it's just noise. It's MAGA cult freaking out, not knowing what to do. So they're just grasping at straws. Whatever they say, you know, I love the fact that, like, Fox News will put a chyron on, right? Like, they're talking about Kamala, and they say, wow, some people question her, you know, role as a attorney general. It's not some people, it's you. Fox News is questioning it, right? So, I mean, who cares, what any media outlet says about that? Because it's just noise, because right now they're really flummoxed. And the fact that even in this early poll, it just shows, like, especially after a convention. I mean, we've been watching conventions for a long time, and every party, Democrat, you know, Republican, they get a nice bounce, not just a couple of points, usually like 6 points. And then it starts to dissipate. But the fact that it was so great to see Trump with his ear bandage and just rambling like a lunatic, really hurt them. And the fact that she's up so early, and Heather said, we have, like, she is the perfect candidate for this moment. You couldn't ask for a better candidate right now for the Democratic Party than Kamala Harris.
And you're right. The even though, as I suggested, it's a small bump for Harris in that one poll, actually in a couple polls, the fact is, it's probably a larger bump than it appears, in that this is the week after the Republicans' National Convention. They should be the ones seeing the bounce this week.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Plus, one quick thing.
Yeah.
When you look at J.D. Vance's polling, I mean, he's got, as CNN did a big report on it, he has the worst polling of any newly announced minted vice presidential candidate after since 1980, after a convention.
Ouch.
He was minus 6 in likability. So
we will get to J.D. Vance.
Why so high?
In a bit.
Well, they're usually plus 19. Just think about that. They're usually plus 19 after a convention. It doesn't matter who the candidate is.
And he's minus 6. Heather Digby, are you surprised at the response to Kamala? Moving on to Kamala now, to her ascension here to become the almost certain Democratic nominee. Democrats, you know, who never seem to come together behind anything, do seem to be coalescing big time behind Kamala Harris in a way that, as I said, I don't remember seeing, even when it became clear that Barack Obama would be the nominee back in 2008. I have never seen anything like that. Are you seeing any substantial splits? And secondarily, I guess, are Democrats okay?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I mean, they're definitely very okay, but you do have to wonder, you know, was it in the water? What happened here? Because it's so unlike the Democratic Party. And we did just have an argument, you know, should Biden drop out or shouldn't he? And it got a little testy on social media and what have you. But the minute that it happened, everybody just, oh my God, you know, they coalesced. And Kamala Harris was not someone, I think, that most of the sort of strategy-minded Democrats would have said, oh, she's the perfect person. But I agree with John. She's the perfect person. And with the minute that it happened, I think everybody kind of realized it. Is there, you know, look, the Democratic base and, you know, many, you know, sort of left-leaning independents, they are disgusted at the idea that Donald Trump might possibly become president again. And his choice of J.D. Vance was an absolute disaster. And they did not want it, but they were kind of, you know, tepid about Joe Biden, not because he hadn't done a good job. He did a great job, but just, geez, can he get through this campaign? I mean, it's always been sort of dragging us down. And along comes this black woman who has tons of experience now. She's a vice president. She's been an attorney general. She's been, you know, a senator. And along comes, she's the perfect person to go to lead the charge of this coalition that she is now, you know, the top of, to go up against that pig, Donald Trump, and everything that he has done, you know, everything that he said and the stuff they're saying now. Look, Mike Johnson had to come out today. The Speaker of the House had to come out today and say, hey, everybody, cool it with all the disgusting repulsive things you're saying about Kamala Harris. You're not going to help here.
Let me play one of those disgusting things. And because John Amato, I know that you and your colleagues at Crooks and Liars spend a lot of time monitoring news outlets like Fox News, so folks like us don't have to. Thank you for your service, by the way, for that. Here was just one of the responses. This one from Tennessee Republican Congressman Tim Burchett, calling Harris a DEI hire.
Biden said, first off, he said he's going to hire a black female for vice president, and that not he just skipped over. What about white females? What about any other group? It just when you go down that route, you take mediocrity, and that's what they have right now as a vice president.
So are you suggesting she was a DEI hire?
100%. She was a DEI hire.
Okay, now, never mind the idea that he said he skipped over a white woman because, you know, the white woman should have become first. That's her rightful place before any of the other women. And for those who don't keep up with Fox and right-wing code phrases, DEI refers to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which I know sounds like a terrible thing, but it's largely become a right-wing dog whistle, you know, code word for black people over the past year or so on Fox. John Amato, how ugly is this going to get with Donald Trump now running against a black South Asian American female?
Yeah, Mike Johnson's got his work cut out for him because these people are never going to not use every racist word that they have. You know, now DEI is like CRT is like woke. I mean, they confiscate it, and it's really about white racism. I mean, just listen to Burchett, how he actually basically said there is no person of minority, a different color, a different ethnic background that is worthy of that job. In the entire country,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
right, mediocre. Like,
not unless you go through all of the white women first, and then.
I mean, it's really despicable, and I mean it's filtering. It's funny, like MAGA is like the Borg, right? So they all get their emails. So like, I got a clip of Seb Gorka immediately, Mr. Hungarian Nazi. saying that, she's a DEI hire, it's a hire. And President Biden should be lauded for actually looking at different people for jobs, as opposed to Trump picks J.D. Vance because why? He's good looking and he's white. That's it.
Yep.
I mean, he's not good looking.
Well, and plus they skipped.
You guys can mention that, but.
Well, they skipped over all of the white men that didn't have beards to hire J.D. Vance, so I don't know.
But think about it. I mean, So Donald Trump is, 77, 78? He never served a day in public service with anyone. J.D. Vance is only 39. He's also never served a day in public office until, when he was hired for the Senate less than 2 years ago. And so for Republicans to attack Harris as a DEI hire because she's a black woman is just nonsense. She's the most qualified person.
Yeah.
She's done the job.
Correct.
Practically.
Yeah. As a DA, as the attorney general, as a U.S. senator, 4 years as vice president. Seems like she's got a lot of skills there. The Trump campaign and Republicans as a whole seem to have been caught utterly flat-footed on this change at the top of the ticket to sort of counter what should really be seen as political malpractice, frankly, for that. Donald Trump and his allies are screaming that Democrats have committed some kind of fraud here and that Republicans should be reimbursed for all of the time and the money that they spent, assuming Joe Biden would be the candidate. And it is kind of hilarious. Here's Trump's senior White House advisor, Stephen Miller, for example, blowing his top about this on Sunday night on Fox News with Laura Ingraham.
They held a primary. They had ballots. They filled out circles. They went to the voting booths. They spent money on advertisements. And as President Trump said, the Republican Party spent tens of millions of dollars running against Joe Biden. Now they just woke up one morning and said, never mind, we're canceling the entire primary. We're getting rid of our candidate, and we're pretending the election has never even happened, and we're going to let donors handpick a new nominee.
Heather, are you surprised at how inept the response has been from the Trump campaign, from the right so far to all of this? How unprepared they seem to be?
Yes. I mean, it's not like, I mean, didn't we just spend 3 weeks just complete, you know, devoting 20, you know, every hour of the day for 3 weeks to discussing whether Joe Biden should drop out and what should happen then? I mean, of course they should have been prepared. But somehow or another, these guys are now they've been very high on their own supply, just kind of assuming somehow. I think because Donald Trump would never in a million years, he's the greatest sore loser in the world, would never in a million years do what Joe Biden did, which was do the right thing for the country, mm-hmm. for the party, for the ticket. He would never do that. They didn't even occur to them, apparently, or at least, you know, they were unable to persuade anybody in the party that this could happen. And part of the problem here, I mean, I did a piece on J.D. Vance, which I do think, you know, I think that choice is sort of illustrative of how unprepared they were, because we all know, we've heard many reports since this all happened, that they would not have picked J.D. Vance if they thought that Kamala Harris was going to be at the top of the
ticket.
And they
do want a do-over, and I want to talk about that after a quick break here. Let me try to get two quick responses from each of you before we get to the break, and we'll come back and we will play Veep Stakes. John, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, at the invitation of Republicans, and what I see as an obnoxious and inappropriate attempt to use Congress for political means during an election year, he spoke to a joint session of Congress on Wednesday. Kamala Harris chose not to attend. She cited a pre-scheduled event elsewhere. But the topic of Israel and criticism of the Biden-Harris position continues. Protesters against Netanyahu on Wednesday were reportedly pepper sprayed in the streets of D.C. So, John Amato, will Harris, as a sort of a fresh new candidate, if you will it make any difference in the seemingly substantial, certainly loud, arguably justifiable opposition from the left to Biden's Israel position? Will it make any difference having Harris now at the top of the ticket, or will that continue to haunt the Harris candidacy as well in the same way as you see it?
Right. Well, yeah, I'm not sure it will matter one way or the other. And the whole thing with, by the way, Republicans have done this before with Bibi Netanyahu, where when Obama was president, when he got into a tiff with Netanyahu. So what did the Republicans do? They invited him to speak at Congress.
Oh,
and they cheered him more than their own president, right? So this whole thing again, and remember, over the summer last year, I mean, hundreds of thousands of Israelis hated him and protested against him because of what he did, his corruption, and then what he did to the judiciary. So I wouldn't show up either. Just the fact that guy destroyed Israel's judiciary, and then he's got blamed. They wanted him out as soon as October 7th happened. So, showing up.
Well, yeah, but never mind her not showing up. Is there still a concern of voters from the left? Will they sort of hold what they held against Joe Biden against Kamala Harris as well?
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, somebody, but again, now Kamala Harris gets to set her own agenda. You know, the idea that like I'm just listening to Fox going off her record. She's a vice president, right? She works for the president. It's not her administration. She doesn't dictate policy. So she has no policy things to run on, right? But now she gets to now carve out what she feels and what she believes. So more shall be revealed, especially at the convention, and we'll see where she lands. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do know that she supports health care, single payer, Medicare for all. We know she's going to try to do her best with Roe v. Wade. So she gets now to be her own person. So it'll be really interesting to see what actually how she approaches this.
Very quickly, before the break, Heather, I know there are a number of Democrats sort of having PTSD this week in some sense, with a woman now likely at the top of the ticket, I've heard from, running against Donald Trump. You know, that didn't work out so well before. So I'm wondering, you got any sage advice for those folks, including those who, you know, took the message from 2016 that Americans are just not ready for a female president, much less a black and Asian one? Any help for those folks today?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I have had the same fears, obviously. You know, I think we all have PTSD to some degree. But it's a different time now. And we know who Donald Trump is now. And Kamala Harris is a different person. She doesn't come with 25 years of political baggage, of years of nonstop hate from the right. They're sort of having to make it up as they go along here.
True, and they're doing it badly.
And I do think that... they're doing it badly. And I do think that she has, you know, a little bit of that Obama magic as well. You know, I mean, there's something about her, I think maybe, you know, it's just being younger. Maybe that's what it is. But whatever it is, I think maybe the time is now. I think maybe the time is now. And I just feel really good about putting up a black South Asian young woman up against Donald Trump. And when she wins, are we going to feel the greatest sense of vindication that anybody's ever felt in their lives? All the women who cried on that night when we saw him take down Hillary Clinton, this will be a beautiful moment. God, I hope it happens.
I was
going to
say,
really hope
if it happens. Don't get too excited
just
yet.
I said I hope it happens, but I said if it would.
That mistake has been made before.
Stop raining on our parade, Brad. Give us at least a day or two to feel a little bit excited about this whole thing.
Nope, that's what I'm here for, to bring the rain.
Okay, I guess so.
I got to take a quick break here. But when we come back, yes, I do want to play the Veep Stakes game a little bit with my guest, Heather Digby Parton of Salon, and John Amato of Crooks and Liars, but not only on the Democratic side, yes, on the Republican side as well. As I noted, I'm sensing some whispers about the viability of J.D. Vance's nomination on the GOP side of the ticket. That is straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Turn and face the strain.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with more fresh changes this week. What will next week bring? Oh, don't ask. There is, speaking with our guest today, Heather Digby Parton of Salon, John Amato of Crooks and Liars, there is, as we have been discussing, much elation at the moment on the Democratic side of the aisle. And I think we would be naive to think that over the next 100 or more perilous days, there won't be more, frankly, stunning shoes to drop, just a friendly reminder. To that end, Timothy Snyder, the expert and author on fascism and tyranny, writes in his newsletter today about the possibility that there may be need to be a change in the Republican ticket now at this point. Now that Biden has dropped out, Harris has become the presumptive Democratic nominee. Not at the top of the ticket, a change on the Republican side, but in the vice presidential slot. He writes today in his newsletter that J.D. Vance, he's in the heady atmosphere of Milwaukee, the selection of Vance could seem like a win for everyone. Trump gets the money he needs from the broligarchs, like $45 million a month from Musk, who happily contemplate installing their guy as his successor, their guy being J.D. Vance. Trump believed he was running against Joe Biden. He was going to win easily. Vance could make his private calculations about Trump's longevity and go along with the show. He was endorsed by the Russian Foreign Ministry for his pro-surrender foreign policy. And then a week later, with Kamala Harris as the presumptive Democratic nominee, everything looks different. He goes on to suggest that if Donald Trump does not win in November, Donald Trump will, of course, not say it was his fault, but could turn to J.D. Vance and blame him for everything, leaving Vance as the scapegoat. Vance must now imagine a world, writes Timothy Snyder, about 3 months from now, in which Trump instructs his followers that Vance is to blame. Trump has driven Republicans out of the party by stochastic violence before. He was ready to sacrifice the life of his last vice president. If Vance leaves now, he will feel the heat for a moment, but he can go back to his private prior, not his private life, but his prior life. So, Heather, I don't know that J.D. Vance is smart enough to realize that he might be wise to step aside. But is there reason to believe that Trump will be rethinking his choice using the change on the Democratic ticket as an excuse to take a mulligan on his first choice of J.D. Vance as vice president?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that he's, you know, regretting his choice now. And that's because J.D. Vance didn't really make any sense unless they were coasting to an easy victory, because he brought nothing to the ticket other than supercharging the ultra MAGAs because that's the only people who can stand him. I mean, he has very low favorabilities. He is not someone who was going to reach out to any of those suburban moms or any of the independents that they needed. They just assumed they didn't need them. Now, Trump has thought that from the beginning, and we have to keep in mind that he thinks he didn't need to bring any new voters because he has persuaded himself somehow that he actually has a majority. It's just that the Democrats have cheated. So they are using their whole plan for the fall is to suppress the vote and then contest the vote.
Is it conceivable, though, that he would ask or tell J.D. Vance to step aside and choose someone else at this point? Or is that an admission by Trump that I got something wrong?
I think it would be an admission. I don't think he'll do it. And,
I agree.
He picked him because there were three people who were instrumental in making that choice. It was Tucker Carlson,
yes.
Don Jr. and Eric
right.
are the ones who made that choice.
But
and,
that
and
was
they
before.
Pushed him hard.
But that was
that
before.
Was before. No, I get it. But but it was a mistake to begin with, and he kind of knew it. I think he kind of understood that he was kind of making a mistake, but he'd convinced himself. And of course, I wrote a whole piece about this, and at the end of it, I'm kind of going, you know, Donald Trump is missing a step now. He's not really as strong and as manly as he used to be. And Eric and Don Jr. are the ones who were making the decisions for him.
Well, but again,
he probably has regrets.
He's got a perfect excuse now to say, well, the circumstances are different, so we're going to change the vice president.
He won't do that.
Well,
yeah.
let's
he
see what
John.
Let's
never admit.
Because
it would mean he'd have to admit he made any kind of mistake, and he never does that.
Never
All right.
happen.
John Amato, you'll be the tiebreaker here. What do you think? Any chance of that happening, that Donald Trump says, I need a new vice president?
Well, I don't think he'll do it, but you know, knowing him, if the polls really tank, he might try one of these, you know, having a presser and going, you're fired, J.D. Vance!
Oh.
You know,
but, yeah. See?
But I mean, but here's the thing, a procedural thing really quickly, because there was the whole thing about getting on the ballot, right? And people didn't understand that Joe Biden wasn't even on the ballot yet. You have to wait till everything's done at the convention. Now, if Trump waits too long, J.D., like, the next person, are they automatically on the ballot? Like, what's the procedure?
Well, it actually becomes a party procedure that they would choose amongst themselves, amongst the executive party. But I don't even know if that's allowable in a case where, you know, the vice president hasn't actually, you know, died or had to pull himself out. It would be unclear. But as you know, rules don't mean anything to Donald Trump.
Yeah,
so he can do whatever he wants. And as long as he's at the top of the ticket and his electors are for him, you know, and we have seen post-election replacements of vice presidents in the past. So I think there is a mechanism to do it if he wants to. But never mind that, because we're almost out of time and we got to get to the Democratic side here. So let me get to each of you, all of you, including Desi Doyen.
Oh, nice.
Two-part question. A, who do you want to see as Kamala Harris's vice president? And two, who do you think will be Kamala Harris's vice president? Let me start with John Amato.
You know, reading around, there's a lot of different choices. Now, just from a just from a look, like as far as a media presence, mm-hmm. right? This isn't who I want, but if Buttigieg or Gavin Newsom mm-hmm. were the attack dogs, they would just destroy everyone. Now, but who can, you know, she needs someone to help her with a state. So I know Josh Shapiro's floating and Mark Kelly. So I haven't really figured on one yet, but I do want them to be able to attack.
Desi Doyen. Let me go to you to, again, two part question, and just to, you know, among the people who have been floated, of course, Mark Kelly of Arizona, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, California Governor Gavin Newsom, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. So, A, who do you want to see as Harris's VP, and who do you think will be Harris's VP?
I agree with John that I think that Newsom and Buttigieg both have the chops to take the attack to the Republicans, but also because they're really talented administrators and would be actually very good at handling the job. You know, there is a question about whether or not you take somebody from a specific state, if that will deliver that state's votes to your ticket. And the data is not really that strong on that. In fact, there was a study that I looked up recently from the University of Dayton in 2020 that found that picking a running mate from a key voting block does not seem to make a difference in voting results in that state. But what they did find was that picking a well-qualified running mate does make the presidential candidate look better to voters and helps them win votes.
And in this case,
the idea of competency.
Well, in this case with Kamala Harris and so much about her sort of unknown, I think that this decision is absolutely critical, that it plays a huge part
because
it's the first, you know, real decision that voters will see that has been made by this presumptive nominee. So I think it's wildly important in that sense who she chooses. And I think there's more to lose, really, than to gain. She can screw this up big time, but if she does really well with it, you know, it may not make a difference. So turning to Heather Digby Parton, A, who do you want to see as Harris's vice president? And two, who do you think will be her choice?
Well, my choice, I agree with Desi and John about Buttigieg. She's very, very talented, and I think he would be an excellent choice. But for obvious reasons, he may not be. So I've kind of moved off of that, and I'm thinking that she should make him Secretary of State. I think he would be an excellent Secretary of State. I think he speaks 10 languages, you know. I mean, the guy is brilliant when it comes to that.
What's the obvious reasons that she shouldn't select him? You said for obvious reasons he shouldn't be. So what's the obvious
reason? Because I think people will consider it too liberal of a, too woke a choice. That she's a, you know, she's Black, she's Asian, she's a woman, and then you pick a gay vice president, it may be something that people think is too much. I personally don't think it would be, but I would be very shocked if they actually went that way. But Buttigieg needs a bigger role in politics because I think he will be the first openly gay president one day. Mm. He is really a brilliant politician, and I really think that there's a, you know, a huge future for him. And getting some foreign policy. Being Secretary of State, he speaks all those languages. He's very, very bright. So I'd like to see that. But getting back to the VP.
So, yeah, who will be the straight white man who will not be skipped over?
I mean, am I wrong here? I mean, is this not, you know, what everybody's saying?
No.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, Shapiro, Roy Cooper from North Carolina, Mark Kelly. I think maybe she's going to go with Kelly. I think that they feel like they've got a real chance to pick up Arizona, which would make one of the other big Midwest states a little bit less important. So he's an astronaut. He's married to Gabby B. Giffords. They have this big, you know, they're very big, both of them on the gun safety issue. And Kelly's very good. You know, he's a very, very competent politician. I think that that's where they're going to go.
But if the basis is to win a swing state, why not Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania?
I'm just saying it could be him, could be Cooper, could be Pritzker. You know, I mean, there are a bunch. Well, that's not a swing state, but, you know, or they've been talking about Evers, right? In Wisconsin. That's his name's
Evers,
come
yeah.
up.
Well,
and
we know
Evers,
who it could.
Right? And then Gretchen Whitmer, who is brilliant.
Well, we know who it could be, Heather. We're not asking who it could be. We're asking who you think it will be.
Well, she said Kelly.
Yeah, well, I said Kelly. Yeah, I think it's going to be Kelly.
All right.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who it will be either. I mean, I think
it
makes sense to choose someone, to choose a white male, because apparently that is the calculus of the American electorate, that everybody seems to feel like, oh, you know, you can't have, you know, more than one woman or more than one minority or more than one person of an, you know, or more than one Jewish person.
Well, that's what I said. Doesn't that knock out John Shapiro? Too Jewy?
Maybe. You know, you got to have a white.
I can say that because I'm Jewish.
Well, Harris isn't Jewish. I guess her husband is Jewish. So
no, but she's a black South Asian female on one side, and a Jew on the ticket.
Yeah, so that might be
too many minorities.
Well, who knows?
Let's just face facts. What they're worried about, like the young people would be fine. Of course, they'd be A-okay with it. I think most people of color would be okay with it. I'm talking about Buttigieg or any, maybe Josh Shapiro, I don't know, who aren't going to be good with it, or what they are afraid won't be good for it, are old people.
Yes.
And, you know, there are old white liberal people, generally liberal people, who love Joe Biden. You know, he was one of them. And they're going to vote for Kamala because, you know, she's the successor. And Biden, you know, placed his hand on her and said, she's who I want. But they are afraid that they just will not be willing to go that far, to go with, you know, more than one, novelty candidate, I guess. So, and I don't know that's true, and it kind of makes me sick to say it, but I'm just saying it.
I hear you, and I got to get out. I'm sorry, guys. And, of course, as you say, they'll be A-OK with that. I'm thinking, well, would they be AOC with that? No, that's probably not going to happen this year. Anyway,
I would love that.
I know you would, because you're one of those, you know, left coast liberals.
Well, I'm anyway, old, but I'm not that old.
All right. John is pretty old. John Amato, thank you very much, sir, for joining us today. John Amato, of course, is the founder of the Never Say Die, crooksandliars.com. You can find him on the Twitters at John Amato. And Heather Digby Parton, of course, can be found at both salon.com and digbysblog.net. And on the site still known as Twitter, at Digby56. A delight to speak with both of you. I look forward to doing it again in the near future. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Thanks, Desi. Thanks, Brett.
Did he say Brett?
I think he did.
I think he did. I'll take it. We got to get out. My thanks to all, to Desi Doyen, of course, as well, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we have ever done since the dawn of man, you can download it for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who hit one of those donate buttons while you are there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you'll find me at The Brad Blog. I hope to see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brat Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.